you're a musician, and I'm not. Mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of music. I used to listen to a lot of music. So one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past, but I want to talk about some more, it's about how people consume music now. You know, I have a generation on you, so how I listen to music has evolved over the years. And I mean, I started off with vinyl 45s, and you know, had always had a record player going, and then you'd buy albums.
So how do you get it now?
Well, I don't listen to music as much as I used to because, as you know, I'm losing my sight. So I listen to a lot of podcasts because mm-hmm. I can't read as well as I used to, and I'm a voracious reader. So I listen to a lot of podcasts. So that sort of, do I listen to a lot of music or do I listen to podcasts and keep up with the news and books and all that other stuff? So I don't consume as much music as I used to. And I used to have a subscription to Spotify, but I let it lapse. Because on my computer at home, because of my vision, I have a screen reader. And so playing music in the background on the computer and having this screen reader is very distracting. So I've stopped listening to music as much.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah. What about listening to music on your mobile device while you're working on the computer?
I had thought about that, but then it's not, now I got to go buy all that music again.
As opposed to streaming.
Maybe it's streaming. But the times I've worked with streaming, the two I had a Rhapsody account at one point, and I had a Spotify account. The problem was I couldn't get them to sort of play just the songs I wanted or just from the artists I wanted, that it kept doing that. If you like this, you'll like this.
Okay.
Sort of the Amazon algorithm. And it bugged me because I kept hearing a lot of stuff I didn't want to hear and I didn't particularly like. I was like, dude, I just want to hear the Ohio Players.
My habits have changed. I like the streaming services.
Okay.
Well, Pandora specifically. Actually, I pay for a subscription because I don't like listening to the commercials. And for $45 a year, it's worth it.
Okay.
For me.
Right.
Because I'm listening to background music while I'm working on the computer.
Right.
And it makes sense. I like the background music. And I don't like creating playlists.
Okay.
Which is a very popular way of folks consuming music. That's too much work for me because my feeling's going to change next month and you got to spend an hour creating a playlist.
Okay, well, see, that's the thing that I didn't quite get because it was the creating the playlist. It was just as much of a pain to me as it seems to be to you.
Mm-hmm.
I used to like the old Rhapsody. Well, I guess Rhapsody's still around, but
yeah.
When it was really popular and they were other MP3 players other than the iPhone and an Android phone. They had curated lists. You could say, I only want to listen to funk. And there was like a disc jockey at the other end. I mean, he wasn't talking, but he would create just that list. So if you wanted to listen to classical guitar, which I love, and they would play, you know, nothing but Andres Segovia.
You can still do that.
Well, but I don't know. But this was so effortless. I just run down, here's the categories. I want this. Is there an artist you like? Yeah. And that was it.
That's kind of how Pandora is.
Okay.
And the reason I like Pandora, because there are real people in the background making those associations.
Now, does Pandora work on the iOS platform?
Uh-huh.
Because one of the things...
Yes, it does.
Because when Rhapsody, I still had a Rhapsody account, but it didn't work the same way on an iPhone. That they made you jump through some hoops. Because I think it's because they wanted the money. And
no,
I was...
None of that now. Pandora's very simple.
Okay.
Very simple. Now, with the other, as a musician... Well, as a listener, I like Pandora.
Okay.
And Spotify, somewhat. I just can't stand their interface. It's a horrible player. And what I don't like about those type of streaming services is that, I guess even Pandora to an extent, they just really screw the artists and royalties.
Right.
but so have the major labels for the past 90 years.
Yes. Yes.
So I think for someone who does not have a major label distribution or who is doing it on them by themselves, then it's a way to get the music out there. Understanding okay. that you're not going to get paid from that, you're not going to make a living from that. And with the A-list artists, if you're at that level, you don't need the streaming services.
Right.
So I hope to get big enough so I don't need them anymore. Fear mongering.
Okay. Do you remember War, What Is It Good For?
Yes.
Absolutely Nothing.
Great song.
Yeah. Okay. So that sort of, I was listening to after the Republican convention and just hearing this nothing but doom and gloom just this trying to scare the shit out of everybody.
That's right.
And I'm like, okay, but you know, Trump, I sort of understood. That's what he's been doing. It's not that I can forgive him, I expected him.
Mm-hmm.
But when you got this black police sheriff coming up saying just some really stupid, racist stuff, and he's black. And then you get this other black dude comes up, and he says all these really ridiculous, racist things. Like, I mean, they're both sort of like blaming Black Lives Matter for the for those police killings.
Yeah.
And the whole point is if we haven't said anything about all the black men and black women
mm-hmm.
who have been killed by cops, and none of the cops get prosecuted.
No. It's fear-mongering. Fear is an extremely powerful tactic, an extremely effective tactic.
But does it scare you that this man might be president?
Absolutely. Absolutely. At first I was like, there's no way he's going to win. And then the further we get into it, I'm like, oh my God, this can really happen.
Yeah.
This can really have more for, I think, the lack of vision from certain groups who won't rally against the common evil.
Yeah. And also, I think some of the Bernie Sanders millennial types who really don't seem to understand the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
They backed their candidate lost, and they're angry about it. And they would rather stay home.
Right.
And because the system's messed up. Well, yeah, the system's messed up. But if you stay home and you don't get involved, the one thing that Bernie said when he finally conceded was to tell his people, go run for office.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the real mess is going on down at the state and local level. Because the guys in Washington aren't doing anything.
And
I don't understand the things that scare us, at least scares me as a person of color, is nothing seems to affect those people. And I'm thinking mostly of Congress. You know, 20 little kids get killed. We can't do any gun control. You know, 49 people get killed at a club. We can't do anything about gun mm-hmm. control. 13 people get killed in a movie theater. Can't do anything about gun control.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy shoots up a campus. Can't do anything about gun control. And then they always fall back on that. But look at Chicago. What about black on black crime?
It's a diversion.
I know it's. Yeah.
I think that's all it is, and they're so good at that.
I want to be able to counter that. I want to be able to get somebody. I mean, maybe we have to see how the Democrats are going to run their convention and the campaign. But it's just, they've had so much time of Trump and his cronies. Just be scared. Be scared. Be really afraid.
Because their followers respond to that. It's all just rhetoric. We know that. It's all just mental tactic that they use, which is effective.
Yeah, I know. But what scares me is that the cause and effect of that is that there are too many people out there who are really, really scared, who haven't thought anything through.
Right.
And who now have guns. And, you know, they're running around, you know, shooting people.
What I thought was ironic that it was one of the police chiefs, I believe, in Ohio. He wanted to suspend the open carry law.
Yes.
You're like, well, see, that's our point.
Yes.
You do understand.
Yeah. Well, but here's the weird thing. I think the cops have always understood that, but nobody, you know,
yeah,
they're not listening. And then when, after a war, you got all this surplus military equipment, and then the local politicians say, hey, we can get us a tank.
You know, right.
We can get an armored personnel character,
and some automatic
carrier,
weapons.
And we get automatic weapons, and we can get SWAT uniforms and all that stuff. And wow, we look. And it's like, but what do you need it for?
Yeah, what do you
know,
need it
there's
for?
Been,
we're citizens here. This isn't a war zone.
Right. And, you know,
I so just, I think from one side, it's fascinating how they do that and how effective it is.
Yeah.
Because we have to understand our opponent. And we have to understand their motivation, whether we agree with it or not, whether we think it makes sense or not.
Right.
You know, all they care about is power and wealth.
Right.
They don't care about human lives. They just care about power and wealth. So
yeah,
your question was, how do you combat that?
Right.
You combat that by at least limiting their power and wealth. That's a short answer. How we do that?
Yeah, that
various ways. Like Bernie said, and he suggested his supporters become active in the political process.
Yes, that's
an absolutely,
absolutely
valid way to do it.
And
there's revolution. There's coups.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole bunch of ways, but there has to be something done. You can't just sit there and talk.
But that's easy. And then I hope that when during the election is that. There are going to be enough people getting out saying, you got to go vote. You got to vote. You know, I don't care. I do care which side you vote for, but you got to vote. You can't stay home. This is too important. You know, I've always thought that Donald Trump, first of all, has a very thin skin.
Of course.
And, I mean, and he gets away with calling people names that, I mean, calling a presidential candidate crooked Hillary, and it's like, how did we get here? That in this country, where free speech is the bedrock, and I fully believe it, and I think people ought to be able to say whatever stupid shit they want to say, as long as it doesn't physically hurt me, and that you don't tell people to go hurt me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I fully support Donald Trump's right to be an asshole.
Sure.
But I don't want him to be an asshole as president.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was thinking about the NATO thing. I mean, doesn't he understand the consequences of what he said? When he talked about, there was an interview in the New York Times where he said, would you protect a NATO country if they were attacked by Russia? And he went, well, I have to think about that, whether or not they've been living up to their agreements to us.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, that's not
and of course, that scares the crap out of all the NATO nations, especially the ones right on the border of Russia.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, didn't you see what happened in Crimea?
I think he and Putin would end up being friends.
Yeah, well, he likes Putin.
Yeah, right.
So I'm saying, so here's a guy who's supposed to negotiate, he's supposed to be tough, and he thinks already that his opponent, Putin, is like a righteous dude.
Yeah, no. I think if he actually gets in, he will be eaten alive by world politics. Although, I think all the people who are really in control are going to shut him down.
Yeah, okay. No, I agree.
The Koch brothers, the Cheneys, they're like, oh, we ain't having this. You're going to mess up our money, and that ain't happening.
Yeah. So, and also, I think if he gives some orders, like to go carpet bomb Baghdad, that the generals, I mean, I'm not favoring a coup in any shape, form, or but there are rules of engagement, and if Congress hasn't declared war, you as president can't just go carpet bomb a whole town, I mean a whole region, because you think you're going to get
I'm terrified about this, and I've only been politically active once when I was very early, just before I could vote. And then I became a reporter, and so I was always on the sidelines covering it and not participating. But I'm retired now, so I may, if no more than just walk around with a sign saying, vote, vote, vote. That's the only thing I can do right now, just trying to get people out to vote.
So that's our message. Get out and vote.
Get out and vote.
Make some change happen.
Yes.
Transgender rights.
Okay, I have to back up to sort of give you some context on my evolution about gay rights. When I grew up, there wasn't gay rights. Most of the time, gay people were in the closet. Though, I always found it really interesting in the black community that now we get this thing about how homophobic the black community is. And I'm thinking, when I grew up, everybody knew who the gay people were.
But we didn't talk about it.
We didn't talk about it, but we didn't say, I mean, but we didn't attack them either. I mean the only joke.
Only if they weren't out. If they were out, they were ostracized. If they didn't say anything,
it
was like, yeah, Uncle so-and-so.
Yeah, and he lives with his friend. Yeah, every choir director in a black church.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knew.
And half
knew,
the band.
And half the, yes. And so we'd go, yeah, okay, we knew that. Yeah. And I mean, I had a cousin who was gay. He wasn't out, but
everybody
in the family.
It was an unspoken.
And nobody, I mean, but he didn't get ostracized. He came to all the family affairs. He was always there. And I was like, nobody, yeah, okay. But the rhetoric at that point was very derogatory toward gays. And, and, you know, faggot wasn't a bundle of wood that you used to put
your
fire. Which, when I discovered that, I had to laugh because I thought, okay, here's another one of those words that got its original meaning
got perverted so badly.
It's like, okay, now how did we get there? Because
I learned that from, I think, Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
Or some fantasy novel.
Right.
I was like, it's a bundle of sticks.
Yeah. Well, it took me a while to get through niggardly.
Yes, you were acting very negative.
Yeah. But, you know, it was like, you're very tight with the money. But that's a totally different, it's also spelled totally different.
Right.
So the thing is as long as when I moved to New York, one of the things that happened to me is I'd be walking around, your mom and I used to go do movie marathons because on 42nd Street, there used to be like between 7th and 8th Avenue, there used to be two blocks of movie theaters. And we would go movie to movie to movie to movie. And it would just occupy an entire day. That would be different fun because you could get into a movie for $2. Yeah. Okay, so part of the thing was that I kept getting hit on by dudes.
Ah.
And it was,
is that where
it
I get
was
that
freaking me out because I didn't understand. I was like, I'm married. I'm heterosexual. I'm not into dudes. I don't. And why all these? What? And for a while, it probably was, what vibration am I giving off? And then I met this lesbian. We were working on some project together, and I was talking to her about it. I didn't understand. And she says,
it's because you were pretty. That's why you're getting hit on.
She said, let me ask you, how many women do you hit on and get turned down by? And I'm like, well, you know, some women don't like me and some I'm attracted to and some are attracted to me. And she said, well, if you hit on somebody and they say no, you move on, right? She said, so what if you hit on her and she said yes? I said, well, yeah. And she said, well, that's what's happening. Guys are hitting me. They know you're straight, but they think, hey, you never know. And that sort of got me over the thing of worrying about, what's with the gay thing? I mean, I'm... But it was never me being angry at gays or thinking that they were subhuman or something. I mean, you know...
So coming from the time that you were in, where do you think that came from?
What? That, why,
I that you were a little more open to...
Oh, well, first of all, I got out of Indiana.
There you go. Yes.
No, but look,
yes, gay folks, get out of Indy.
Yeah, but it's also, I read a lot as a kid. And so I would be, and I read books, adult books that I probably should not have been reading at my age, but I read them anyway. And I would look at stuff and things didn't make sense to me. I was always like, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand that. So when something would, like, the big one was, you know, when I became aware of sex, and then it was, you know, guys had to marry virgins, but we had to be experienced. I'm like,
wow.
Wait a minute, how do you do that? How do you have...
There's a dichotomy have, there.
Yeah. And then a friend of mine, that's probably 18 or 19, and he was several years older, and he married this widow, and she had two kids, and they were clearly in love. I went and said to him, it's like, wait a minute, you know she's not a virgin.
What did he say?
He said, well, yeah, she's got two kids.
Clearly, he's okay with it.
Yeah, I was like, okay, so you're okay with this woman you really care about, who clearly is not a virgin. And it's okay. But before, he was one of those big proponents of, I'm going to marry a virgin.
Well, I'm shocked to hear that even just one generation prior to,
okay,
we're still
yeah.
teaching you
yeah.
that you have to marry a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that's what I'm saying, that those things didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I was always questioning stuff. That's why I became a reporter. I kept asking questions. You know, it's like, well, right. that doesn't make any sense to me.
So you've seen the evolution of
I've seen the evolution of gay rights, and I've seen my evolution personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went down to the Stonewall with friends before. I mean, it was still a gay bar. Mm-hmm. It was after the riot, but. It was just another bar, mm-hmm. and it was also right next to this very literary bar,
right
down on Greenwich. And also, you know that I used to work four to midnight, and it would a bunch of us would get off work, and we didn't go home. We went out mm-hmm. to go either get some breakfast or some dinner, or go hang out at a bar. And at midnight, then. Bars tend to close a little earlier than they do now, and so we had to go to clubs that were open late, and they tended to be gay clubs.
Uh-huh.
But in those days, this was in I guess the late 70s, early 80s, everybody went to gay clubs in New York.
That
was the place you went to go dance,
yeah,
or that was the place that was open, and so, you know, I just became very comfortable around gay people and didn't think anything of it.
Right, because there's nothing to think about. Earlier when I said gay people get out of Indy, I mean, come to New York, there's a lot of other gay people that you can vibe
yes,
with.
Yes, yes, Well, so then I put the question to you because you have a lot of gay and lesbian friends.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of them. We're close. I know them good. So how did you, what was the transition? Because, I mean, I know I didn't pass on anti-gay sentiments to you. If I did, I didn't do it consciously.
No, you actually didn't. I didn't get any of that from the family. But I also came to New York very early.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
New York
that's
is,
true.
You know, can't
yeah,
escape
what were
it.
You, eight or nine when you first when you moved back here?
Nine,
okay.
So it was normal.
Right, okay.
It was just normal. Then you found out how great their parties are. And you're like, oh, yeah, this is my tribe.
Oh, that's funny. Because it's just,
So even past our generation with the millennials and even further, it's even, they've even taken it further.
Okay, but to get to what, to the
evolution. Because transgender wasn't even the part of the conversation. Right. It was gay and everything was normal, but even, I mean, it was funny when, well, there's always even these subcultures of gay culture. So now the, now we're even deeper into trans.
Okay, but here's my theory about that is white privilege is running out of others to be superior to.
Interesting.
So black folks got some rights, the Latinos got some rights.
And we're starting to speak out.
Then gays got some rights, now they can marry, and then it's like, okay, now who can we mess with? Because we're running out of people to mess with. Oh, so let's do bathrooms.
Right, transgender.
But here's what's going back in context. You know, everybody seems to forget. Do you know who Christine Jorgensen was?
No.
Christine Jorgensen was the first transsexual. Was a guy, and she went to Sweden and got an operation and became a woman.
Okay.
And was on billboards and pinups, and she was gorgeous. But so Christine Jorgensen was the first openly acknowledged transgender. And then Renee Richards, now the tennis player, was a guy, and nobody. But see, nobody, because these were sort of special trainees, and I know that's a bad word, and I did that deliberately. You know, it's like good niggas.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, this is not anything new. That's what I'm sort of like, why are we fighting about this now? Because Christine Jorgensen was in the 50s. That's how long ago it's been.
Yeah.
You know, she made the cover of Life magazine. I mean, this was a big deal.
The things swing back and forth. You know, why are we in such a, in this environment where it's so oppressive?
Because I think that we were talking earlier about fear, and I think part of it is that the white privilege is being questioned so openly now, and they don't have any answers except to be scared or to pass laws that make it difficult to vote, make it difficult for women to get health care, make it different. I mean, who the hell cares what bathroom you use? I mean, you know, you gotta have a body check before you go to the bathroom.
Right.
And especially if you're a woman and you're going into a women's restroom, they don't have stalls. You know, they don't have urinals.
There are all these couple of reports that are read about straight men going into women's bathrooms because they were accusing somebody of being a trans.
Yeah.
And so I replied, I was like, well, it seems like the straight men are the ones you got to worry about.
Yes. Well, but I mean, how many times have women been attacked in bathrooms by straight men?
By trans.
Predators. Hmm?
Yes.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, it's the other way.
Right.
That's, you don't see, and what you see now is, I just read a statistic that just shocked me, that this year so far 15 trans women have been killed. And I'm thinking, well, there can't be that many transgender people in the entire country. I mean, if there was,
well, there's a lot.
I'm sorry, like, it can't be that many. I mean, is it 100,000? Is it 10,000?
It's a lot. There's a lot more than you think.
Okay, but we have no statistics on it.
No, but even saying, I think that's even a dangerous territory, saying how there can't be that many.
No. What I'm saying, but no, I'm looking at the other, that if 15 have been killed and they aren't that many, that there is a conscious attack on lynching trans, especially trans women.
Yeah, there are a couple of trans friends. They say, you know, we still have to be careful. There is still a chance for us to be murdered out in the street.
Yeah.
In the open.
And there was the two recent cases where the one woman carried a gun. Mm-hmm. She was in a concealed carry state. She had a permit. I just feel like this is the latter part of this is the last gasp of how can we mess with people.
That's, I like that. And so once but you know what, they'll find something else to dig up somewhere.
Yeah.
Because that's how they do.